The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for August is a visual Bible resource. Lutheran Bible Companion contains more than 600 photographs, illustrations, and detailed maps that bring to life biblical times. Find out more about Lutheran Bible Companion at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Lutheran Bible Companion, The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for August.
Goes back to our double standard of just assuming that the woman or the mother is the only necessary gender in a child's life, as though men are not contributing anything more than his sperm and his wallet.
The pathologies are shallow music, shallow worship, that because it has a manipulative emotional element is mistakenly perceived as a rich encounter with the Holy Spirit.
God's intention was not to provide codes and secrets, but rather to explain things and to show things clearly.
You can get in a pulpit as a dispensational minister. You can attack unbelieving Protestant liberals. You can attack those who don't take the virgin birth seriously or who don't believe in a bodily return of Christ. But what you can't do is tell the story of Christ from Genesis to Revelation.
In the last 20 minutes of Issues, Etc., we're going to play Issues, Etc., Soundbite of the Week. You heard a little taste there of the soundbites. There's more to them, so you're going to want to listen in the last half hour. And then after you've listened, it's your opportunity to vote and to pick Issues, Etc., Soundbite of the Week. In the meantime, you know, we always have these, intuitions, the gut feeling that if you, let's say for the sake of argument here, if you sleep around a lot before you get married, you might be kind of ruining something for your future life. Now, in every other respect, we think practice makes perfect, but in this case, that intuition goes the other direction, or at least it ought to. Then along comes a study that actually seems to confirm that gut feeling about sexual relationships before marriage. Joining us to talk about a new study on these sexual relationships before marriage and how those who've engaged in them themselves talk about the impact on later marriage happiness, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway. She's senior editor at The Federalist, and she's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled, "What You Do Before You Say I Do Matters for Marriage Happiness." Molly, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
It's great to be here.
You have been thinking and writing about the National Marriage Project's recent study out of the University of Virginia on the effects of premarital relationships on marital relationships. And you say that less sliding, more deciding might not be a millennial motto, but it should be. What do you mean by that?
Well, one of the things that was interesting that came out of the study was that when people just kind of slid through major life events, like the first time you have sex, when you move in together, when you get engaged, when you have a kid, when you kind of just slide through these things instead of making a conscious decision to say like, oh, you know what, I'm going to get married now, I'm going to make a life with someone, it ends up meaning that you have lower marital quality. So the study tracked people and looked at them from before the time that they were married and then tracked how their marriages were going. And then they found this really interesting thing that the more you made a conscious decision about what your life was going to be like and what your relationship was going to be like, the happier your marital happiness ended up, the happier your marriage ended up being.
What else did this study find that you found interesting?
Oh, well, there were a couple of other things that I thought were great about it, or, you know, just interesting and provocative. But one of the things that also came out was the more partners, the more intimate partners that a woman had prior to marriage, definitely the lower quality of her marriage was. And it wasn't actually even in the initial report, but I asked for some follow-up on those numbers. And if a woman only had sex with her future spouse, the majority of those women who had only had sex with the man who they're married to, the majority were in high quality marriages, 54%. And then as you see the more sexual partners they had, that quality just keeps going down, or the percentage who are in quality marriages keep going down until you get to the point where if they had sex with more than 10 partners, they were frankly quite unlikely to have high quality marriages. Only 23% were in higher quality marriages. And I mean, it kind of stands to reason. It kind of makes sense. And there's also all sorts of correlation issues. You know, the type of woman who's only going to have sex with her spouse is going to be a different type of woman than someone who thinks it's okay to have sex with, you know, 28 people or whatnot. But I still thought it was interesting. You know, it kind of goes with what you might suspect, but it was still kind of interesting to see the data.
Why did the authors of the study at least label some of their findings counterintuitive?
I don't know. Actually, that was one of the findings that they were talking about that was counterintuitive, and I thought that was the furthest thing from counterintuitive. But one of the things that they also said, which I guess is kind of counterintuitive, is that, you know, we're in a culture that really values expertise. And so the more experience you have in something, the better you're normally considered. So the more experience you have in a given career field, your higher quality employee or whatnot. But when it comes to relationship experience, it turns out that's, you know, it's not the same thing. So when it comes to relationships, you're actually doing better by not having tons of experience with, you know, how to break up with people, how to end a relationship, all those things that actually aren't very helpful for when you're in a marriage and you know, it's all about staying together and sticking it out. A whole history of breakups actually doesn't turn out to be very helpful.
Why is this? Is it, I guess what I'm wondering is it because people who have, and let's talk about multiple sexual encounters, because that seems to be a pretty potent aspect of the findings here. Is it because there's a constant comparison with lovers of the past or some sort of comparison with a kind of an aggregate future perfect lover of that may come along in the future? What's going on?
Yeah, they kind of speculated on this. They didn't have good data on it, but they said that the people who did the study said they thought maybe the more you're aware of alternative partners, the more relationships you've had, the more you can compare your current partner with past people. And of course, you always only compare what's bad about your current partner with what's good about your previous partners. You always forget to remember that the whole package people are full of good things and bad things. And so you start comparing, you know, their dating style, their physical head, you know, communication ability, and so on and so forth. And it ends up making you less sad, less happy, less content with what you have, even though, you know, marriage is all about having only one partner.
Let's come back to the subject we started on, and that was kind of the intentional decisions, conscious decisions versus just kind of ending up together. You talk about kind of a vodka-fueled encounter.
Yeah, I thought this was, they actually asked people how the relationship, so they're tracking all these people, and it was like about 1,000 people who were in a relationship but not married, and 418 of those ended up being married. 418 of these people ended up being married. So they asked them, you know, if you were married, how many of you started out your relationship with a hookup? And I was shocked. It was actually like 1/3 of people said they began their relationship with a hookup. Now, they didn't define what that meant. So you don't know if that's just, you know, met on the dance floor and had a nice dance, or if it means all the way to, quite intimate relations. But one of the things that was interesting about it was that if you had met through a hookup, you did have lower marital quality. I mean, it wasn't the end of the world, but it did play a role in how you evaluated your own marital satisfaction. And so, you know, if you just kind of continue that on, it's going from hookups into first-time sex into living together into even marriage, or, you know, you just get married because you have a kid or something. You're just sliding through all these things. You're not making conscious decisions about how you want your life to be, what kind of partner you think is right, who would be a good mother or father for your children, you know, all those things that really require some thoughtfulness. And it's not, you know, again, it's not terribly surprising that maybe if you are just letting life happen to you instead of making some good decisions, that you might end up less satisfied.
And even those, I note, even those who say, look, even the cohabitation before marriage, that just kind of happened, proved to be less happy than those who said, yeah, we cohabited before marriage, but that was a conscious decision. We went into that with our, so to speak, eyes wide open.
Well, yeah, I think what they were getting at there was that some people just sort of end up living together, and other people say, we're getting married, we're engaged, we might as well start living together now. And that would be a more conscious way of approaching living together than if you just sort of like end up, you know, oh, I can't pay my rent and you're there and why not move in? You know, that kind of thing where it's not so much about starting a marriage together. It's just about letting things happen to you.
You're, Molly, you're young, you're cosmopolitan. How, in your personal experience, how often does it happen that a couple of your friends say, we're going to move in together, and yeah, this is headed toward marriage, but we're not ready for that. Maybe we need to plan the marriage, or I mean plan the wedding, or save the money for the wedding, whatever it is. How often does that work out well?
Yeah, I can't remember what the data was from the study, but it was kind of surprising how many people actually do live together before they're married. And I found that surprising because I know the data on these things show that it's a really bad idea. You end up frequently unmarried. You know, you think you're moving in because you're going to get married, and you end up unmarried, or you just end up not having as great of success in your marriage and whatnot. But I have had, you know, more than a few friends. They all know how I feel about this. I always call it anti-shacking. But I had one friend who assured us that he was moving in with his girlfriend as just the last step before marriage. He said, those of us who had moral problems with it, we told him that he shouldn't do this, and he just reiterated over and over again, this is the last step before marriage. Well, you know, we came to know and love the girl as well, and it turned out like 3 years later, she had to move out because there was no marriage on the horizon. And this is, you know, this is not an uncommon scenario. Of course, now she's in her young 30s. She was really hoping that she could start having her children by now. You know, she really loved this guy. She's brokenhearted, and she's very upset about it. And you know, sometimes it works out fine, I guess. And it, you know, people take care of it in the long run, they get married. But it seems like just such a horrific risk and a waste of really quality years to not be in a committed relationship where you can start building your lives together.
And finally, you have said here, and this, I think there's some great insight here to kind of respond to all of the findings that this this study has brought forth. You say that finding a perfect spouse isn't what marriage is about. That, talk about counterintuitive, talk about countercultural. What do you mean when you say finding a perfect spouse isn't what marriage is all about?
You know, and I fear that I didn't learn this until I actually got married, because I totally bought into this lie that, you know, your spouse is supposed to be the perfect fulfillment of every hope and dream and desire. And then once I got married, I realized, like, oh, that's actually not what it's about at all. It's about how I can serve this person. You know, maybe this person needs me and I need him. You know, we need to serve each other and whatnot. But of course, our society totally looks at this as if marriage is just about, you know, finding your fulfillment. It's a very selfish approach. And as anyone who's been married knows, it's a ton of sacrifice. And it only is good and it only works if there is a ton of sacrifice. And so I wish, that's the one thing I wish I could, you know, pound into the heads of all my friends who are waiting to get married because they're waiting for this perfect person who, of course, will never appear, that they just totally are, they've got a wrong view about what marriage is and about what is accomplished in marriage and about how God uses marriage to help us serve other people as opposed to, you know, just meet our selfish needs.
Oh, and you also, before I let you, you also opine a bit on the big wedding, which the study found for some reason actually is another contributor to future happiness or coincident with future happiness. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I actually had a quibble here. I didn't get into this when I wrote on this, but one of the things they found was that the bigger your wedding, the more you rated your own marital happiness. And they did control for income and education, you know, to kind of make sure it wasn't just a factor of like wealthy people had, were rating things easier in life. But I, you know, I still, I get what they're getting at, and I get why it would make sense that you might see this tie, because if you have a big wedding, it means you have a huge support network. It means you have, you know, a large family, you have church friends, you have community friends, and that you are making a commitment in front of them, and that they are sort of making a commitment also to support you. I get why it would be, but I also wonder if this part of the study didn't show that fewer people are getting married precisely because we have this ridiculous wedding industrial complex that makes it such a big production and so difficult. I mean, you know, it used to be that if you wanted to get married, you could kind of just do it, you know, within a couple weeks and gather some friends and you were good to go. And now it's just such a headache and it's such a ridiculous waste of money. I wonder if only the people who are so committed that they're willing to put up with all that are the ones who are going through with it, and if that wasn't what this study picked up on in terms of marital happiness. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Somebody listening to us says, look, I've had, 15, 30 previous sexual partners. I've had those hookups. I've found someone that I think I actually do want to spend the rest of my life with. Are you telling me it's not worth it because I've already ruined my future?
No, I mean, if you're a normal person, as we all have in our past, you look at this and you just start to despair. But I think what's important to realize is, you know, again, we're all sinners. We've all messed up. We've all done the things incorrectly. But from this point forward, it is wise to be conscious about what you're doing. Focus on making better decisions from this point forward. One of the things that was actually kind of comforting about the study is even if certain things made it more likely that you were going to have a high quality marriage, plenty of people who had done things the opposite way had also rated high quality marriages. So, just because something is more likely doesn't mean that it's not going to happen for you. So I think the best advice is to be conscious and deliberate, stop letting life happen to you and think about what you want and how you want to get there. And marriage is, as we know, is such a big part of fulfillment in life. And it's it's something children need, of course, too, if they need an intact family with mother and father, if at all possible. So I think just from this point forward, make better decisions.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is senior editor at The Federalist, and she's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled What You Do Before You Say I Do Matters for Marriage. You can read it under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. And you can also follow her on Twitter at MZHemingway, MZHemingway. That's her Twitter address, at MZHemingway. Molly, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
When we come back on this Friday afternoon, live this August the 22nd, get ready because we're going to play Issues Etc., Soundbite of the Week. That's next.
Those beautiful notes were just the beginning of We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God, Concordia Publishing House's debut CD collection from Pastor Stephen Starkey, one of the most significant Lutheran hymn writers of our time. For a limited time, save 10% when you use promotional code URA. Simply visit cph.org today. Lutheran thought, Lutheran substance, Lutheran music, brought to you by Concordia Publishing House. Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Imagine SteadfastLutherans.org as the internet version of your neighborhood pub. Your neighborhood confessional Lutheran pub, that is, where the finest in Lutheran conversation is going on at every table and at the bar, sometimes contentious, but always informative and unabashedly Lutheran. We're only serving Wittenberg Ale. We even have a guy named Norm, so check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.org. We'll save a seat at the bar for you.